welcome to the Climate Tech Talks. I'm your host, David Contreras, an energy professional with over 12 years of experience in the sector. We will explore in this series, along with CEOs, founders, and the leaders in the clean and climate tech sector, the different pathways and technologies that will drive society towards a net zero future. Please join us. The views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not reflect the opinion of my current employer, TS. In this episode, we had Siobhan Clark, an operating partner at Launchpad PP.
The biggest proportion of the team, 80% of the team, is actually focused on helping the portfolio and the companies go through their scaling journey. So we set up Launchpad to have, there's a small origination team, a small portfolio team. The rest of it is set up around practices. So the growth practice, there's a people, technology, operations, and finance.
We also explored how one of Launchpad's portfolio companies, Stride, via their Nook technology, is providing better data and analytics to unlock the potential of geothermal to better understand the risk and the procedures of, you know, common civil engineering, to see what's happening in the archaeology realm, obviously the CCUS and the traditional seismic exploration. We discuss additionally, what are some of the main traits and the advantages of being a generalist versus a specialist as an investor? And finally, how Launchpad is helping progressing the search and the scale-up, especially, of net zero technologies. So I hope that you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to the show, Siobhan. Can you describe first your background and obviously your role in Launchpad? And effectively, if you can describe what Launchpad BP does and how it's helping the entire ecosystem.
Yeah. Hey, David. I mean, it's awesome to be here and kind of like, I think we're going to have a pretty interesting conversation for the next while. Launchpad. Well, where do we start? Me or Launchpad? The two are interconnected. So
let's start with you. Yeah.
So I always kind of say my background is the commercial end of tech. So I've kind of worked in startups, large tech kind of around the world, and then also on the investment side. My heart is really about kind of finding certainty in complexity and finding an unlocking potential through this idea of a value exchange between a number of parties. So, you know, short round trip is born in Northern Ireland. That is important for the rebellious nature. Also kind of university in Manchester in the UK, and then went from consultancy to MBA to Cisco in London, in Singapore, and in San Francisco. Set up my own business to work with startups and move back to London 2017 to join episode one. So focused on investing at the seed level in software companies in the UK. And then approximately 18 months ago, BP came along, tapped me on the shoulder and thought, hey, how would you like to come over and take some of that interest in investing and make an impact on a global scale and make an impact by building out this progressive portfolio of digital companies that will shape and change our kind of our climate future.
Fascinating. No, great summary. Very, you know, international and diverse career so far. I'm interested because you mentioned that you were involved as an investor at seed stage. But I understand that Launchpad, it's a bit different. It's kind of focused on developing, on scaling business that are already kind of reaching maturity and obviously have revenue. But can you describe that, how Launchpad fits into the wider ecosystem?
Yeah, absolutely, David. And you're right. It is very, very different between the seed level investment, where in some ways you're trying to figure out how do I get to my first 10 customers and what am I learning from all of that and how does that help me to scale? So that's kind of like the 0 to 1 kind of game, if you want, or 0.5 to a 1.5, the 0 to 1. we talk about Launchpad as the it's a scale up engine, it's a scale up factory. So we go from the 1 to 100 level. And when you're going to the 1 to 100 level, what you're doing is adding layers of people, you're adding layers of complexity in terms of the customer base, and you're always keeping an eye from a technology or a product point of view about where is the future, about what you want to head to whilst delivering and building value for today. Layered across all of that, you still have to deliver financial returns. So our focus as Launchpad, we have 5 companies in the portfolio today. Our aim is to get to a portfolio of somewhere between 10 and 15 companies with $1 billion worth of potential in the next kind of like 2 years. We have, as I said, 5 now, very much in the industrial analytics space and some in intelligent commodities. And our plan is to add another 3 this year. So if there's any of kind of the listeners that are thinking about, well, where does that fit? In some ways, we talk about that as a comparison to early or kind of like a Series A round, an early kind of like Series A or kind of small and mid cap PE, where they're on the right journey or just right as the timing is right for scaling.
Great. And you mentioned, so the plan, or you sort of alluded to it, is grow unicorns. You mentioned the 5 companies in your portfolio. Maybe we can, I can pick up maybe a couple of those. And if you can explain how they fit into the wider, Launchpad / BP, even in terms of decarbonizing, right? In accelerating the, the decarbonization, getting to net zero. So I'm a geophysicist myself. So I'm quite interested in one of the companies that it's in your portfolio, which is Stride. Okay. Can you help us understand how Stride fits into that picture?
Yeah. And so Stride is really a company that enables us to understand what is happening under the Earth's surface. And it does that in a way that is non-intrusive to the environment in which it is, and does that in a really efficient way. So I think if you look on the Stride website, you see where their nodes, and I'll come back to describe what is the node in a moment, where their nodes are used to help understand what is happening in archaeology sites, what is happening kind of in opportunities for geothermal, what is happening in opportunities for CCUS, as well as some of the traditional kind of exploration seismic surveying. The node that Stride has developed, so a piece of technology developed that is maybe the size of the pen that you're holding, slightly bigger, it's a bit of like a fat kind of, one of those, what do you call it? The a fat, thick kind of pen that we'd use to write on a whiteboard. And you put those down and it helps to be able to understand what's happening under that surface in order to be able to make decisions or for companies to make decisions. And Stride is, part of this understanding to get to net zero. In some ways, we have to actually understand what is happening in our world and understand that at a way that enables us to make the right decisions. So Stride fits into this area for us about our investment thesis around industrial analytics and industrial analytics for energy system optimization. So helping to understand what is happening in particular spaces in order to optimize either on existing energy systems or to explore opportunities for new ones in terms of leveraging the existing resources like geothermal in a way that is non-intrusive and positive for the environment.
Interesting. So what's the main difference then if you compare that to legacy technologies like, geophones and vibrators, etc.? Is it cost efficiency? Is it faster? Is it less intrusive? I mean, what are the benefits?
Yeah, there's obviously the less intrusive because that is a smaller node that kind of comes in compared to previous ones. It allows you less disturbance to the earth. And then the second one is obviously the kind of cost efficiency, which is important for customers, particularly I think over the next couple of years. And the third component is actually about people's health and safety. So to understand what's happening in complex areas where you might have ice, where you might have a lot of forestry, and where you might have a lot of brush, how do you do that in a way that is safe to the people that are kind of putting out those nodes, but still kind of collecting in the information? That's kind of like at the heart of what we're doing here as well, is about putting people at the center of it and making people's lives easier.
Great. And I guess that there's a lot of use as well in, for example, areas like civil engineering and monitoring, you know, structure, resistance. I don't have the right word maybe, but
yeah, it's got potential there, David, for sure. I mean, Stride's only a couple of years old as a company, and it's going... It's kind of really getting out there and adding value to their customers. And I think you said the civil engineer, I think there's so many opportunities when we understand what is happening. It's exciting.
Yeah, no, totally. So if I, in a major kind of theme, if we talk about those five companies and you have Fotech Solutions and Leeds and others, so what are the sort of the commonalities among the teams, among the sort of growth opportunity that you see of these companies maturing to a unicorn level? What sort of things, from an investor point of view, are you looking?
Yeah, sure, David. And this is, you know, back to when I described some of the investing that we're doing is like an early Series A or kind of this mid to low cap PE. We're looking in some ways similar to a lot of other investors. You're looking at what is the size of the particular market that the company is kind of entering into? What is the product or the technology and how are they solving a problem within that market for their customer base? So you've got, is it a big enough kind of market? Is the product kind of solving it for what it needs? And you're also kind of looking at the team. So is this the team that has the passion, that has the understanding, and that has the grit and resiliency to kind of build and scale, to take on that scaling journey and support the delivery of their product to the customers? And all of that has to add up to financially good sense and a really good return. So it's similar to a lot of other investors. It's interesting that you kind of pull on this point around the teams themselves and the people. And it's very typical in a scale-up journey to have the semblance of a core team, but to enable them to build out a leadership team, to build a sustainable scaling culture, and perhaps to add other people into what might have been the founding team, that brings with it some interesting scaling challenges. But that's where you're looking for in the people. Are they the people that others are going to want to follow because of their passion, because of their beliefs, and because they're open to a large ambition?
Fascinating. So how does it work? I understand that there are entrepreneurs in residence. Are all these five companies kind of close together? What sort of contact, how often they are working with you? I understand that you obviously help them to reach that next level. But what sort of help you're giving them in practical terms?
Sure. Yeah. It always comes down to what are you really doing that's making a difference?
I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's all good, but what are you really doing? we spend a lot of time thinking about this when we set up Launchpad. So, you know, Launchpad as an investor is approximately about 40 people. And that might sound a lot for an investment landscape, but there's actually only a very small origination team that is kind of looking at the deal flow and kind of bringing in the companies and working on that front end. The biggest proportion of the team, 80% of the team, is actually focused on helping the portfolio and the companies go through their scaling journey. So we set up Launchpad to have, there's a small origination team and a small portfolio team. The rest of it is set up around practices. So the growth practice, there's a people, technology, operations, and finance. And for each one of those, they are a team of talent that we've hired in from companies that have scaled. and for companies that have operated at large scale. And the reason why we deliberately designed that and created those into practices is that we wanted to be able to have the people who knows what it feels like, not just the practical frameworks for scaling, but they know what it feels like to go through that crazy journey. And so that they can then relate to the companies in the portfolio on a different level. How that translates into practice then is that the example being a company kind of comes into the portfolio, they've maybe got like 20 people, but they're about to triple headcount in the next 12 months. What do you do for that? So that enables that the people practice can come forward and say, here's the policies, make sure you've got all your policies in place. Here's how you build out your a simple thing like an org chart. Here's how you consider the leadership positions that you've got. Here's how you deliberately embed in and create culture. Here's a framework for those workshops. Why don't we take those on board for you? Oh, you haven't got a chief people officer or a people person in to help you to manage that. Why don't we do that for you? And I can be your interim person for 6 months as you hire out that particular team. So it gives an ability for this practices to be resources that the companies in the portfolio can draw on. Now, as we add more companies to the portfolio, we don't intend to grow the Launchpad core team very big, because we see that as the companies grow, they become more and more independent on their own right. And so they've built up their teams. They're kind of on a different side of that scaling journey that then the practices can then bring that experience to whoever the next portfolio company is. And that's that creates this circular learning and this embedding of kind of like people, emotions, and that talent into a circular, hopefully positive loop and outcome for
them. Yeah, no, I love, I'm a big fan of virtuous circles and cycles. And basically you're giving them the tools, the methodologies, or obviously the internal talent to help them mature. No, that's great. Which leads me to, then I want to understand a bit. I'm a big fan of the venture capital world, obviously the startup scale-up business. In terms of the kind of traits, the skills, the mindsets, mental models, everything, from an investor perspective, what do you think makes an investor, you know, really strong at the top of their game? What are you seeing with your colleagues? What is inspiring? What sort of things you learn from them?
I think fundamentally, to be a good investor, you need to be a people person. You need to understand people at their core and then help them to be even better versions of themselves. So I put that one, I think you have to be driven by, you know, this old coach versus player. You're the coach. As an investor, your predominant role is as a coach to support the teams and the CEOs and the boards to be better than what they were yesterday. And I think the second condition as an investor is that you have to have these two elements together. So one is curiosity and the second one is hunger. And they are interrelated. So to be curious about the world, to always be asking the question, why, what's happening in that market? What are the dynamics? What product would solve that? Where does that work? And the hungers, the desire to change that. Oh, well, if that's like that, why don't we solve for that? Why don't we do X, Y, Z? So they're chasing down their curiosity, but they're also chasing down the supporting of people and helping them to unlock themselves. So they're always, that hunger translates into ambition, and the curiosity translates into seeing the world in a different way.
I love those two, curiosity and hunger. Those are brilliant. Now that I'm starting to understand better how this whole network works, obviously there are different paths to become an investor, but where do you think, in terms of that curiosity, do you think that the multi-generalists have a bigger edge, or those are sort of specialized in one single field? Where do you think are the main advantages of each?
I think there's been a wholesale change in how people are considering what does it mean to be a good investor and where the talent is coming in from it. And I've seen this with the women in VC. Like what started out maybe 2 years ago, maybe not even 2 years ago, as a small WhatsApp group is now 2,500 women investors connected together in one Slack group. That is phenomenal. I think there's also been this acceptance that investing, you know, a recognition more publicly that investing is so much more about people. It is about the experience and sharing that experience with someone so that they can be, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. So I think this recognition that if you've been in an operating position somewhere, that lends a different point of view as an investor. And we know it's about a diversity of teams within the investor that will spot in what is my opinion, different and better opportunities for the future. So David, back to the point of the investing and the landscape, I think the investing landscape has been a bit as a recognition that they've had to change, that they become much more open to diversity, to inclusion. And they're just kind of like, that will bring a different future now. That means that something that is, it's a small slither of people that actually get into the investor piece. But I think that's going to grow in terms of the individuals that are coming into that. And we're just going to see a broader base for it.
No, I totally agree. Obviously, we're recording this from the UK, and this from here, and also I've seen it in other areas like the US, where there is this big push, right, to bring together other views on their top talent. Obviously, you mentioned women, but also different backgrounds from underserved or not seen types of people that can actually become also great investors. And the same applies for founders as well, right? I think that there is a big movement that I just believe will make better, stronger teams, companies, and obviously investment companies as well. It's an interesting movement and very exciting. I think that we are approaching the end. So do you want to wrap up with kind of an optimistic view of what's happening in the net zero environment and how you guys are helping?
Yeah, I think the one thing that's really exciting, and I've been having this conversation, David, I'm sure you have, about are we going through another, green tech bubble?
Yeah, people have been nervous about it.
Exactly. I think what's really interesting and why I'm optimistic about Launchpad and the aspect of this kind of landscape that we're in is that there is a real power of both between Launchpad's kind of like scaling capability and the access to someone like BP and that support. Because for companies that are scaling within and trying to make a difference within net zero, they need access to really big distribution channels to unlock the advantage to really deliver their product or value at scale. And that's what makes me really excited about the combination of kind of BP and Launchpad and what we're doing. I think we're entering into, whether it's a green bubble or not, I think we're entering into a landscape where things are going to change and there's a real acceleration towards doing something different. That's got to be good for us, right, David?
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. I think that the main major difference, you know, from 10 years ago is that now society really gets it. Investors get it. And we're just moving towards, hey, this needs to happen and it needs to happen at a scale and right now. And I think that's quite optimistic. Yeah. Listen, Siobhan, I know that you have to go. It's been lovely to chat with you. And probably I will have to get you in the pod again probably soon. So, but thank you very much for joining.
Definitely. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you like this episode, please subscribe and leave us a review. It really is important to us. Thank you. This episode was produced by Daniela Rice.